Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Morales, always willing to play hurt, show up even when he's not at the top of his game. Dr. Tony Weaver, our fine health matters host, with us today to talk about medical matters and this, that, and the other thing. And I guess we talk about medical matters. Tony, how you feeling, buddy?
Well, I have a upper respiratory infection. I am, being a doctor, I'm actually non-infectious myself, so no one need worry about it. But I would stand back a little bit from your radio if you're listening to this, and by all means, don't use earphones, because that could obviously lead to problems. I am on so much medication right now, Chuck, just to try to make it through the show, that I'll tell you I'm hallucinating actively as we're talking.
Well, he's got so many cough drops piled up in front of him, he looks like he's sitting in a machine gun pit.
Yep, so if Chuck finishes the show and solo, you'll realize that my plan did not work.
All right, time to take on the issue of the day, and that is?
The Affordable Care Act.
Oh, boy, everybody's favorite.
Yeah, I've got what happened, I'll tell you. There was this guy named Ian Morrison, who he describes himself as a healthcare futurist. And the guy's actually pretty bright. He was a geography major in college, and if you're really smart and you're a geography major, this apparently is what you do. So I heard him at a national meeting in Philadelphia, and thinking about what he said, I came up with five predictions regarding the Affordable Care Act, what we can expect to see kind of short-term and long-term coming from the Affordable Care Act.
All right, let's start with number one then.
Okay, let me just a little bit of background. Again, signed into law March 2010. The fun part has already come into law. The coverage for children with existing conditions, the children remaining on their parents' premiums up to age 26, end-of-lifetime limits of coverage. I actually, even as a physician, I was not aware that the insurance companies at some point, they just say, okay, you ran out of money. The prescription drug discounts already happened, free preventative care for people with health insurance, new policies, and also on Medicare has already happened, and the 80-20 rule where the insurance companies actually have to use 80% of the money you give them to pay for your health care. Has already happened. Now, though, we're getting into the not-so-fun part. That is the Medicaid expansion, the individual mandate. And by the way, Chuck, the individual mandate is not how they choose the bachelorette. This is the individual you're required to buy insurance. The penalties on that, let's see, I've got a page here on that, $95 or 1% of your income, whichever is greater the first year. Year two, $325 or 2% of your income. Year three, $695 or 2.5% of your taxable income. Those penalties add up. What's interesting is it still financially would probably make sense not to buy insurance. What they found in Massachusetts, which is the model for this, is people don't really like to do things that are against the law. So people would sign up, even though if you just looked at it in terms of dollars and cents, it may make sense not to sign up. The feds are counting on us being law-abiding citizens and going ahead and signing up.
Well, a lot of people, especially the young people, who will be the ones who will be expected basically to carry the ball on this thing financially for the country, the younger, healthier people, right now they're not signing up because they're realizing that it's not, as they bill it, the Affordable Care Act, and they're going to risk it basically. And a lot of people are, you know, from the individual standpoint, who are paying for their own health insurance are losing policies. I know that the over at, I've heard at one of our area hospitals, there's part-time workers who are losing their insurance, and a lot of companies are looking at dropping their insurance plans for their employees. It's a bad deal.
Well, you can see where Chuck stands.
Yeah, well, I think it's a piece of garbage legislation. I'll just say that right now.
The young people, it's going to be interesting. Not a part of my predictions, but I have wondered, and I know you have as well, Chuck, how long young people will shoulder the burden of caring for this large number of baby boomers that are retiring. Shifting money to them, and that's an open question.
Well, and here's the thing that the ACA did not solve, and this was the goal from the get-go. If you remember, the argument for this back in 2009 was that we had 30 million Americans who did not have health insurance. The prediction now, and this is from the Congressional Budget Office, that we will still have 30 million Americans who will not have health insurance. Now, it may be a different 30 million Americans, but we'll still have about one-tenth of our population that will not have health insurance.
Yeah, so there are, as we say, there are problems. Now, let me go back. Chuck and I were talking beforehand. I'm not really a political person. I look at problems and try to solve them. So here's some of the problems we'll run into. I will say, let's start as a preface. I work in two free clinics in the area, and we saw a large number of people who were working but not making enough money or not in a position where they could buy their own insurance through no fault of their own. These are people who were going to school, trying to improve themselves, people who had either part-time jobs or full-time jobs that did not offer insurance as a part of benefits. And so all along, our healthcare system has really been kind of coming unraveled. I think we're going to see some marked change from this. And let's go. Like we said, Chuck, we'll go ahead and get started. First thing is obviously, even if the healthcare exchanges worked perfectly, absolutely without a single glitch, this was going to be a big mess getting these things started up. You have to realize it's not like you just put in your information and bam, you've got health insurance. That information has to be verified. The information that you provide has to be accurate and has to be checked. And we know even applying for insurance before the Affordable Care Act was somewhat of a challenge. And I think especially trying to enroll and switch so many people in such a short time, there are going to be all sorts of errors in information. People are going to think they're covered when they're not. The information is going to be wrong. Getting the money to the physicians who are providing care is going to be a mess.
And here's another thing, Tony. There's also some security issues about some of the information that's being put on some of the health insurance websites. Some of the stuff is getting out there and will allow people to perhaps have their identity stolen. They're at risk right now. I've seen a few cases of that, people talking about it on various programs on television. So the websites that they have apparently are not safe in terms of protecting personal information. I mean, that's a big problem.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the Medical Group Management Association did a survey back in the 1st of October, 47,000 physicians, about whether or not they would participate in the exchanges. And actually, less than half of them felt they would participate. One of the big things about this law is if you sign up for health insurance, and let's say you don't pay your premiums, under law, you can catch up with your premium during a 90-day grace period. The first 30 days, the insurance companies will pay for your health care even if you missed a premium. But the last 60 days, you come in with a health insurance card that looks valid, but the health insurance companies will not pay your premiums. So the docs are wondering, a lot of them are real skittish about signing up because they will have, and obviously with all this glitch, the question is, how much will they be on the line for collecting from their patients or just writing off to get this thing started? So a lot of people stand to lose a lot of money as this thing starts up, especially as unevenly as it started.
Well, Tony, have you heard this? I have, that there are already doctors and clinics that are talking about no longer accepting Medicare or Medicaid patients as a result of all this.
Yeah, there were, first of all, there are a number of practices and particular specialties that will not accept Medicaid anyway. As a matter of fact, you can't find a dermatologist in the state of Kentucky who will take an adult Medicaid patient. So we already have people doing that. I think the other thing you will see is as the regulation levels increase, it'll finally get to the point where participating in insurance just isn't a very good financial model. So I think we'll see a lot of people going off grid, so to speak. Bring me some eggs and a chicken. Bring me $100, I'll see you. And we just won't even talk to the insurance companies. I'll just go cash on the barrel. The other thing I think you will certainly see, because of the uncertainty about whether or not a person has insurance, whether or not they've made their premiums, the way this law is written, you'll see a lot of physicians' offices are going to ask for money up front. I think that's going to be the rule rather than the exception, that people have to pay up front because of the uncertainty about whether or not the insurance companies will pay.
Well, here's the deal when we talk about, Medicare and Medicaid. Because of the ACA, the reimbursement rate is dropping back now to 60 cents on the dollar, from what I understand. That's a cut. I think it was around 67 cents on the dollar. Is that right? So, I mean, the providers are getting a cut. Now the idea is, okay, well, fine, then you're going to get more people paying now because they're going to be covered, as opposed to having some freebies out there that you're going to have to help. That's not necessarily that's a gamble right there, especially if people are not signing up.
Right. There were several things that the government had in place to support the safety net. Hospital like St. Clair that sees a lot of uninsured patients, they got something called disproportionate share payments, which was a payment because the feds knew that St. Clair was seeing a lot of patients for free. That went away because, again, everyone's supposed to have insurance now. So if this startup is as rocky as it looks, then a lot of the established funding sources are going to go away, and the new funding sources will take a while to go on. So there will be no doubt, there will be upheaval, and there will be certainly a very rocky start.
Now, where are you on your list of predictions here? Which number are you?
I'm ready for number two. Number one was rocky start.
All right.
Number two, a lot of people have very bare bones insurance policies. A lot more cash on the barrel for medical care. Because, again, the ones that are affordable are going to be to have a lot higher deductibles. It's almost like the Republicans got their wish. You know, they were talking about health savings plans with catastrophic insurance, and some of the bronze plans sort of look like that. You basically take your money and you pay for all your routine care. Again, the preventative care is covered. That's one of the requirements. But a lot of the things that you will do will be it will be in a sense covered by your insurance, but with a very high deductible, so it won't be covered. You'll be paying it as a part of the deductible.
Okay, number three.
Number three. This is the one you've been waiting for, Chuck. As we move toward a government locus of payment for health care, big business is going to change their role. Right now, we've got the individual mandate. You know, the small business mandate was delayed for a year. That's people with 50 or less employees. Then these exchanges will be opened up to big business. And Dr. Morrison said at the national meeting I went to is he said big business is looking to go from what they call a defined benefit, I will take care of you, to a defined contribution. Well, I will give you some money and you take care of yourself. And what I think we're going to see, and we've already seen UPS, the spouses of their non-union employees who had access to insurance elsewhere were dropped from their list. Walmart's doing the same thing. A lot of big companies will start to shed retirees, spouses, and families and things like that and push them over to the plans. They would rather pay a certain set amount than what they have been doing, which has been being on the hook for everything.
And we know that there are millions of Americans out there right now who are at risk, and hundreds of thousands of them have already lost their individual plans here in the country. And one of them being my father, and this is another reason why I'm not a big fan of the ACA. You were just talking about number three, and the point being that companies were dropping these defined benefits. My father retired from a company that he worked for back in 1996, and after he left, the company offered him health insurance. They said, you can keep your plan if you'd like to. You just have to pay your premium. Just continue on with us. We appreciate your service to the company, so we're going to allow you to do that. Well, here recently, he received notice from that company that they would be dropping him from their insurance plan due to the rules and requirements of the brand-new ACA. And they said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We're going to give you a phone number so you can call, since you live up in the Cleveland area. Ohio is not participating in the health exchange program, but we'll provide you with a phone number. You can talk to someone there nationally, and they can help you with the Ohio element of this. And at the same time, for the next 2 years, we will give you a small subsidy to help pay for your health care. So he got on the phone, called up, found someone who handled Ohio, and was on the phone for 2 hours. 2 hours, and actually had to take a bathroom break halfway through the phone call. He's 82 years old, so, you know, that's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I think we'll give that to him.
Yeah, we'll give him that one. So, and the lady was nice to him and said, sure, go ahead. So he gets back on the phone, and he starts talking about, all right, this is what I had. What can you do? And so they said, well, first of all, your premium is going to go up by 50%. He goes, well, yeah, but that's a substandard policy as to what I had. What can you do to get me to basically the same thing that I had, which included dental and prescriptions and things of that nature? So, okay, so they worked and worked and worked, and they finally found a way to get him back to basically the same type of plan he had before. But now he is going to be paying 200 to 250% more for his health coverage than what he was paying in the past. And not only that, but before he had no copays, now he will have copays. So those of you out there can understand perhaps why I'm not a big fan of the ACA as to what it's done to my 82-year-old father, who obviously didn't need all that extra money that he'll now be paying into health care.
So, but I think the point that Chuck makes, I think we will see this more as the large businesses look at their financial picture. And again, as these initial problems are worked out, I think that the offer of a government-sponsored health insurance exchange rather than employee-sponsored and almost unlimited liability for their retirees, for spouses, for families, I think we will see a pretty big migration. I think if you look 5 years or 10 years down the road, we are no longer going to have employer-sponsored health plans is what I think. I think that this will eventually, it will just make more sense to push everyone toward these exchanges.
Well, a lot of these companies are looking at this thing saying, you know what, it's cheaper for us to pay these penalties than it is to try to meet the regulations of the ACA and provide health coverage for our employees. And it's a matter of, for a business, it's dollars and cents. They're trying to survive. They're trying to thrive. They're trying to make money for the people that own those businesses. And so this is what they're going to have to do.
Prediction number four. Which I think also runs into your father's issue. There are two different Americas right now, those who are embracing this, and Kentucky is a state that really is, and California is, and those who are resisting or refusing, like Texas. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on those 2014 elections. If the Democrats hold a majority in the or a working majority in the 2014 elections, this law will be set. It will be difficult to upend anyway, but the only chance is if the Republicans were to win the 2014 elections.
Again, we're on the front page. We're talking about the new ACA with Dr. Tony Weaver. Hear him this weekend on Health Matters on MSPR. I'm Chuck Mraz. More in just a moment.
Support for MSPR is provided by Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky. From small towns to big cities, wherever you go in Kentucky, there's a good chance you'll see a Toyota Camry. And for good reason. It's America's best-selling sedan made right here in the Bluegrass. But Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky does more than build world-class cars in Kentucky. They're an important part of our communities, providing thousands of jobs and millions in donations to local organizations. Toyota is honored to be a part of your community.
Welcome back to Front Page. I'm Chuck Mraz, joined by our Health Matters host, Dr. Tony Weaver. Don't forget to listen to Health Matters this weekend here on MSPR. Tony, you are at point number four. Are you following up into number five?
Well, let's go back to four for a minute. Again, I want to stress, I'm not a political person. This actually came directly from Dr. Morrison. He said, look, this is very simple. If the Democrats were to maintain some type of a working majority or plurality in Congress, they're obviously going to continue to support the Affordable Care Act. And at that point, it's going to be really hard to resist going forward. I think if the Republicans win a huge majority, they're going to put all their efforts into overturning this. So, again, the people can speak here. I just want everyone to realize in advance these 2014 elections are going to be absolutely key to determining the future of the Affordable Care Act and health insurance in America.
Well, if this thing continues to spiral downhill like it is right now, that's going to have a huge impact, as you mentioned, on the 2014 elections. But you know, my biggest problem with the whole thing was that they went whole hog on this health reform instead of trying to do some things incrementally to try to improve things. Now, I know that that both Republicans and Democrats had agreed that you should cover people with pre-existing conditions, and I think that's one of the arguments. That's one of the good things, if you want to put it that way, about the ACA. It does do that, but you could still do that and not do some of the other stuff. I think that John McCain, when he was running for president, had touted the plan where that you could tax people's health benefits that they received and then give them a tax credit on the other side, and then also suggested, which I still think is a great idea, allow private insurance companies to sell across state lines. Private insurance companies are very tightly regulated by the federal government, and allowing more competition through these companies, by these companies, wherever they're operating, would increase the quality of the coverage and also decrease cost because they're out there competing for business.
Yeah, the counter argument to the state line, which I think it has a lot of merit, but the counter argument is then that there would be one state that sets up an almost unregulated market, and obviously all the insurance companies are based there, and we've seen certainly that with credit card companies and others. They go to where the least regulation is. So it would create winners and losers if we did that. I'll go to five because I think this is something that people need to be aware of. There is going to be a massive shortage of health care providers coming off this. If this does even part of what we think that it's going to do, these shortages are going to push. And they were going to happen anyway. Over half of all doctors are over age 55. We are also changing from providers to patients. And this massive amount of baby boomers, the level of health care that people expect, it was we've got a model for this in Massachusetts. There were a lot of problems getting it started up. It actually functions fairly well, although there are still problems. It depends on the political persuasion of the person you ask. But it is running in Massachusetts. One thing that was clear, primary care providers became in very short supply. And Massachusetts has more doctors per capita than just about any other state. You take a doctor-starved state like Kentucky, and these shortages are going to get really severe.
Why are we losing doctors, Tony?
Well, we are ramping up. The University of Kentucky, University of Pikeville, the Kentucky College of Osteopathic Medicine there, and the University of Louisville have all increased enrollment. Also, we have a PA program in UK, and also one in here, the branch campus of that here in Moorhead. There is a PA program down at Cumberland's as well. We are turning out nurse practitioners. Each of these has a problem. For instance, the physicians, Medicare pays for residency slots, and you have to go through a residency to be licensed as a physician. Our residency slots haven't increased, even though we've increased the number of medical students. The PA program has issues with clinical rotations. The nurse practitioner program, and again, I'm speaking from the outside, but they have issues with having enough faculty to turn out quality products. And so each of these three has some issues in terms of providing the number of people we'll actually need. It's going to take them all. I am not a person that advocates exclusion of one or other groups because I think we're going to have absolutely everybody to make this work.
And there's another point to be made. Expect your taxes to go up. It's going to happen. For instance, here in Kentucky, where we do have the health exchange, 85% of the people who've signed up thus far have signed up for the Medicaid element of this, meaning that they will be taxpayer subsidized. And when you get more people on the Medicaid roll, someone's going to have to pay for those people, and that means it's going to be all of us.
Yeah, the counter argument is those people. I took care of some of them at the free clinic, but our free clinics are really pretty bare bones. Many of those people are already getting care at emergency rooms, which is extremely expensive. So the argument is, look, we're already subsidizing them with our insurance payments. If we can provide the primary care workforce, give them the ability to access primary care without going to the emergency room, in the long run we save. Now, that's an untested hypothesis, but that's the idea. We are already paying for health care for everybody. It's just not in the form that is the most economical form. I will tell you, I think the other thing, I've given you five, but I'll give you six. I think that there has been a lot of pressure on us doctors and hospitals to try to lower the price and to come up with a more sensible, more sane way of providing health care. And I think as we shift the burden onto people actually with these high deductible and high copay insurance plans, people are going to start asking questions. Yes, I understand you recommend this. How much is it going to cost me, and why should I pay that much money for it? And I will tell you, that is a conversation in the first 10 years of my practice I rarely had. Most people just said, well, I guess the insurance covers it if you think it'll be good. So I think we're going to make some changes here, and Chuck and I talked about it in the break. I think we are headed for something that might actually work at some point. This is going to be very messy in its rollout. There were too many political compromises that right now we still have an unrealistic expectation of medical care, what it can do. Well, we all want to live forever, despite the fact that we don't take care of ourselves. And so it's going to take a while to adjust those expectations and go forward together. But I am no fan of the status quo. There were too many people who just simply did not have access.
We're going to be in a zigzag pattern, though, Tony, in trying to correct all this. I mean, going back and forth on some things. You're probably right. This is only the starting point. We're probably a long way from the finishing point where we find something that may actually work. But it's going to be, I think, a long and painful process as we move through it.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess any final points that we're getting set to wrap up here in the next little bit, but I guess people will, I want to say be patient with it, but it's really hard to be patient if you're someone like my dad who's now going to be paying a whole lot more for your health insurance and you're also going to be taxed more.
Yeah, I think what we've got to realize is that whether it's a revolution in a country that was governed by a dictator or a revolution in healthcare, the birth pangs of change are very, very painful. But hopefully we can move to something where we actually are doing the right thing by our people for healthcare.
Well, Tony, thanks as always, and we'll listen to you this weekend on Health Matters. Hope you feel better.
Thanks a lot, Chuck.
Dr. Tony Weaver, our guest today on Front Page. I'm Chuck Morales, host of the show. See you next time.